So a quote from Sangharakshita from Wisdom Beyond Words. The Heart Sutra is so called because it constitutes the heart or essence of the Prajnaparamita, giving us in a highly condensed form the essential meaning of all the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. If we really know the Heart Sutra, we know, in a sense, everything. So, in this talk today, I'll be setting the scene and providing the context for the rest of the retreat, running us through the six great thunderclaps that are at the heart of the Heart Sutra. And we're going to revisit those throughout the week. And hopefully this morning opening us to the possibility of dwelling in the mythic dimension of the Heart Sutra through meditation, reflection, discussion, puja. So that we can turn into Shariputra and become wise, humble, receptive and sensitive and ready to hear those thunderclaps roar. So I don't know how many of you've read Wisdom Beyond Words, but in this, there's a commentary, Bhante gives a commentary on the Heart Sutra. And in that commentary, he's suggesting that the form of the Heart Sutra is as vital and as relevant as the content. Now, actually, we do a much shortened version of the Heart Sutra in our puja, so we don't have the whole form of the Heart Sutra. But in the form, you've got two key characters. It's like a play. So we've got Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra. And the Heart Sutra is a kind of dialogue between the two of them. When I say dialogue, it's the loosest sense of the term dialogue, because basically Shariputra asks a question: how should we practice the perfection of wisdom? So Shariputra comes to Avalokiteshvara with that question. And the Heart Sutra, as we know it, is Avalokiteshvara's answer to that. So taking it, how should we practice the perfection of wisdom? So I'm just going to give you a little bit of information, of an aside information about Shariputra in the Mahayana Sutras. So originally, Shariputra was one of the main Buddha's disciples, and he was a highly, highly intelligent man, extremely wise, became enlightened, one of the chief disciples. And he was one of the instigators of creating the Abhidharma, so creating the lists of mental events, going through the mind and allowing us to work out what our minds are doing. So he's given us all those lists, along with other people. The father of the Abhidharma, famous for his wisdom, and the father of the Abhidharma. However, what happens in the Mahayana school is that they slightly take the mick out of Shariputra. What happens with Mahayana texts is Shariputra is kind of used as a bit of a fool in some ways, because the Mahayana wants us to open to more expansiveness and sees the Abhidharma, those early things, as kind of limited and fixing us into little boxes that actually aren't quite true. So what we've got is a Mahayana text where Shariputra's high wisdom and understanding and enlightenment is kind of said, well, yeah, that's fair enough, but there's more. So that's the situation we're in. And then we've got Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, and we brought in that sense of the importance of the fact that Avalokiteshvara is the Bodhisattva of compassion. So why? Why the Bodhisattva of compassion? Why not the Bodhisattva of wisdom? Why didn't he ask the Bodhisattva of wisdom? That's the strange thing. So as Maitri Siddhi mentioned last night, compassion and wisdom, that is perfect wisdom, are completely fused. They're not different. They need to arise together. If we're going to break apart our ideas of and our understanding of reality, we need to do that with compassion for ourselves and for everybody else. And with Perfect wisdom arises compassion, and vice versa. Perfect compassion arises wisdom. So we need to have a strong, unbreakable thread of compassion available. And we do that through Avalokiteshvara as we explore the perfection of wisdom. So it's great that it's Avalokiteshvara that's there. We're exposing ourselves, opening ourselves up to the six great thunderclaps that are the heart of perfect wisdom. Now, thunderclaps are usually loud. I mean, we usually just call it thunder. We don't usually call it thunderclaps. But they're usually loud. They can start off rumbling in the distance. And then there's a sense of, as they're getting closer, so imagine a big thunderstorm coming. Don't really have them this time of the year. Imagine it rolling in. You can hear the rumbles. You can kind of ignore it when it's far away. And as they get closer, as they get louder, you cannot ignore them anymore. And if you are right in the center or the heart of a storm like that, you may well feel your hairs rise up on end. You might feel shaken up, shocked, vulnerable, opened up, woken up maybe, might wake you up. So they're great as an image, as sort of creating that idea that there might be some fear, there might be some excitement. There's a deep, low, threatening, rumbling growl in the distance that's always going on that we can tune into or choose not to tune into. And we're here on this retreat to move towards the storm. We can't always expect the storm to come to us and open us up, but we can on this retreat turn towards it if we'd like to. So that's why we need to stay in touch with Avalokiteshvara's compassion, because we need to be prepared to be shaken to the core and to find no core, potentially. And thirdly, Avalokiteshvara, if we take one of the meanings of his names as the Lord who looks down on with compassion, Lord who looks down with compassion. So he's got that kindly gaze. He wants nothing more than us all to be free from our worldly limitations. He's not looking down with sort of a pity, oh dear, look at those. Look, aren't they silly? Look at what they're doing, running around, making a mess of things again. He wants us to be free of our limitations, and that includes our intellectual limitations. So some of us mentioned last night as we were talking about trying to understand the Heart Sutra, you know, that thought of, if you think about it too much, if you start bringing the intellect and the thinking mind into it, actually it's impossible to work it out. So we have to drop that as well and be free of those. Okay, so the other character, Shariputra. So Shariputra, during the Heart Sutra, is listening. And this also brings us to our role, really, during this retreat. Our role is just to listen, to be like Shariputra as much as we can. So we do need to ask the question, how should we practice the perfection of wisdom? We might also have other questions. What is the perfection of wisdom? Why the perfection of wisdom? There might be other questions there. Ask the question, acknowledge the fact that we're all here. So most of us have chosen this theme, this sutra, because we're inspired by something in it. Some of us have chosen it because it's the right time of year. That's harder to open up to sometimes. Even if we don't know what we're inspired by, somebody asked me, well, why the Heart Sutra? And I kind of go, there's a moment of tightening and kind of a, well, I'm not quite sure actually. I just know I have a response to it, and I can't explain it and I can't put it into words. That's enough, that's okay, even if we don't know what it is that inspires us. And in this sutra, the other way we need to be like Shariputra in a way is we can assume that he's ready to hear the answer. So his intellect has taken him so far, but he needs to ask this question to take him further, to break through to the next level. So he's asking the question and he's ready to hear the answer. So it doesn't turn into this big dialogue between Avalokiteshvara and Shariputra where everything Avalokiteshvara says, Shariputra says, well, what do you mean by that? That's not my experience. I've been studying the Abhidharma for years and years and years, and I know exactly what's going on, and I think you might be wrong. I will think about it, of course, but I'm not sure. He doesn't do that. He doesn't get all defensive in the kind of say, well, what do you mean? Why? Who gave you the authority and made you the boss of perfection of wisdom? You're not even a wisdom bodhisattva. You're a compassion bodhisattva. He doesn't do all that kind of stuff. He doesn't go aloof and disappear, switch off, la la la, think about something else, think, oh yes, yes. Avalokiteshvara thinks he knows. I know something a bit more special than that. He doesn't do that. And he doesn't do, woe is me, I've spent years of my life grafting over this Abhidharma, and now look, it's all fallen apart. What am I going to do? I've wasted my life. Sigh. So we might recognise ourselves in some of those. Because we probably aren't quite ready to hear at all times. So one of the things that I'd like you to just reflect on today and maybe talk about, you know, in your groups later is, what is it that you do to stop yourself being able to hear? What are your tendencies when you're not receptive and not open? Do you get angry and aggressive, defensive? Do you just start asking loads and loads of questions, but don't give yourself time to think about it? Do you sit back with your arms crossed and sort of say, well, yes, I already know this. I already know this. Or do you do the kind of poor me, I've wasted my whole Dharma life so far without understanding it? So just notice and then bring compassion to that, because that is resistance, because you are just about to face reality and just about to have some thunderclaps that might break through and break you open into something else. So don't beat yourself up when those things arise. Just learn to look at them and think, oh yeah, there's my whatever tendency. Or even just, oh, I'm not feeling very receptive to this. So unlike possibly us, well, we'll see. We could be totally receptive this week. That'd be great. So Shariputra, he had been practicing for years and years. He'd been building up that knowledge and understanding. He'd been also helping countless other beings to come to understanding of reality through his understanding and creation of the Abhidharma. So, you know, that is a really helpful system for people. And yet Avalokiteshvara is just saying, no, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that. So each time we recite the Heart Sutra this week and for the rest of our lives, can we be flexible, humble enough to let go of everything we think we know for the sake of deeper clarity? So that's the question you can ask yourself. Can I do that? How does that feel to just really be open each time, as if it's the first time of hearing it? So again, coming back to what Shariputra is relying on that on in that sutra, is he's relying on Avalokiteshvara's compassion. And can we do that too? The teaching, although it is the thunderclaps, it is breaking us open, potentially. It's not actually there to destroy us. Avalokiteshvara is not trying to destroy us. Although, as Bhante says, our limited wisdom and limited intellectual understanding does need to die in order to give birth to perfect wisdom, which can feel a bit destructive. But Avalokiteshvara's teaching is to free us. It's to free us of that limited understanding. Limited wisdom, limited intellect. So another question you can ask yourself is, can you tap into your faith and confidence in that? Confidence in Avalokiteshvara's compassion, confidence that the teaching leads to freedom rather than to destruction. So in a way, Bhante's sort of talking in this form of having these two characters. He's saying they're both within us. So Shariputra as a slightly literal mind, intellectual mind within us, and Avalokiteshvara as the aspect that goes straight to the heart of things, straight cuts through to reality. So in a way, if we can allow the Shariputra within us, the literal mind within us, to listen to Avalokiteshvara, who is also within us, and do that with sensitivity, then we can start listening more deeply to the Heart Sutra. So I'm going to pass out the English copy, the English translation that we use in the puja. If you'd just like to take one and pass it on. Helen, in a minute, I'm going to be using a drum just so you don't get too much of a shock. So the six great thunderclaps. I'm going to tell you what they are, and then I'll tell you where they are. So I'll tell you what they are, then where they are. So the first thunderclap is the five skandhas are empty. The five skandhas are empty. The second thunderclap. All dharmas are empty. All dharmas are empty. The third thunderclap. In shunyata, no dharmas exist. In shunyata, no dharmas exist. The fourth thunderclap. All Buddhist teachings are simply relative truth. All Buddhist teachings are simply relative truth. The fifth thunderclap. Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. The sixth thunderclap. All Buddhas of past, present, and future gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. All Buddhas of past, present, and future, gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. So where they are in the text, so the setting the scene is the Bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and sundered the bonds that caused him suffering. The first thunderclap is, here then, form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness no other than form. Form is only emptiness. Emptiness only form. Feeling, thought and choice, consciousness itself are the same as this. First thunderclap. Second thunderclap. All things are by nature void. They are not born or destroyed, nor are they stained or pure, nor do they wax or wane. Second thunderclap. Third thunderclap. So this is in Shunyata, no dharmas exist. So in emptiness, no form, no feeling, thought or choice, nor is there consciousness, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no colour, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of, nor even active sensing. The third thunderclap in Shunyata, no dharmas exist. Fourth thunderclap, all Buddhist teachings are simply relative truth. No ignorance or end of it, nor all that comes of ignorance, no withering, no death, no end of them, nor is there pain or cause of pain, or cease in pain, or noble path to lead from pain, not even wisdom to attain. Attainment too is emptiness. The fifth great thunderclap, Bodhisattvas gain enlightenment and become Buddhas only by relying on the perfection of wisdom. So know that the Bodhisattva, holding to nothing whatever, but dwelling in Pranya wisdom, is freed from delusive hindrance, rid of the fear bred by it, and reaches clearest nirvana. And then finally, the sixth, all Buddhas of past, present and future gain enlightenment by relying on the perfection of wisdom. All Buddhas of past and present, Buddhas of future time, using this Pranya wisdom, come to full and perfect vision. So then we move on to the mantra, and there are many different ways of interpreting the mantra, but it is a secret mantra, so we don't need to kind of get a definitive translation of this mantra. It's the great Dharani, the radiant peerless mantra. It has no meaning in some ways, but also it happens to also be the six powerful thunderclaps. So a few people last night were sort of saying they struggle with memorizing the whole of the Heart Sutra. Actually, this mantra is the whole of the Heart Sutra, even more condensed to those six great thunderclaps. So Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasangate, Bodhi, Swaha. And they appear in sequence, in the sequence of our teaching and understanding. It's a path that we can follow. So we can follow the path of the mantra. One simple translation is gone, gate, gone, gone beyond, gone completely beyond, parasangate, bodhi, swaha, so it is. So some of you, especially some nihilists around the place, will be kind of like, will have noticed that the Heart Sutra is basically saying everything is empty. And the more you think you know something, the more you've got it wrong. So it can kind of end up a bit, little bit meaningless, or feel a bit meaningless. Well, everything's just empty. So that's when you hold on to that thread of compassion. So what we'll be doing through this retreat, first of all, to first of all be able to let go of those concepts, you've got to understand what those concepts are. So partly what Much City will be exploring with us tomorrow will be, and today as well, we'll start looking at the concepts that we've got to let go of. We need to actually have an intellectual understanding of those concepts of the six senses, the 18 dhatus, so you've got six sense organs, the six sense consciousnesses, and what the mind does with that, and the objects, things that we're seeing. You've got to understand those kind of Abhidharma categories that Shariputra set up for us before we can let go of them. There's no point in us just saying, oh yes, everything's empty, without actually understanding what it is we're saying in that. So Bhante actually says, some exceptional individuals might make the leap into the perfection of wisdom from nowhere, but they are very rare, and one cannot assume one belongs to that class oneself. So let's not assume that. So we need to truly know what the five skandhas are before we can say, oh yeah, they're empty. We need to explore the six sense organs, the six sense consciousnesses, the six sense objects. Also in the Heart Sutra, we've got other Buddhist teachings, the Four Noble Truths. Do we really know and understand that? We've got the 12 links of the chain of dependent origination in there as well, which we're all saying, oh, that's empty too. But do we even know what they are, what the Nidana chain is? It's only when we can truly understand that intellectually and also in our beings, because some of us, like me included, I have to feel and experience those things. It's not just about like book learning the list, and for me anyway, learning the list and sort of getting an understanding in that way. I have to actually feel it. I have to feel my ignorance. I have to feel my sanskaras forming. I have to feel my craving before I can actually say it's empty. If I don't feel it, then I'm just blocking it down. And it's only when we can actually truly understand all those Buddhist teachings that we can start to recognize their nature as unsatisfying, impermanent, insubstantial or empty. And only again when we've really explored them, felt them, understood them within ourselves and how they drive our behaviour and our thoughts and our feelings, it's only then we can begin to unhook our investment in them as being part of me or mine, so my thoughts, my feelings, or that's her thoughts, her feelings over there. And we can become free of our reactions, our preferences, our wishes, our dislikes, our aversion and our craving towards it. And then just start allowing ourselves to be a bit more like Shariputra. So we need to deepen our understanding. We need to get to the level in a way that Shariputra was starting from when he asks the question. He's not starting from a place where he doesn't understand all those concepts. And then, as Bhante says, if we can do that, Avalokiteshvara's statements then represent not the exploding of an error or the removal of wrong understanding, but the deepening of a limited understanding. If that limited understanding were not there to begin with, it cannot be deepened. So we have got to understand it first. So this week, embrace our limited understanding. Keep embracing it. Keep embracing our intention and our wish to be here, the intention to turn towards this material. And as Bhante says to finish, learn to listen to the voice of Avalokiteshvara in our own hearts and wait. Wait for the flower of the perfection of wisdom to blossom there.